It's a mailbag on this Wednesday afternoon, May 11th. What's up, everybody? Fantasy football today. Adam Azer, Dave Richard, Jamie Eisenberg. I don't have anything clever to start the show with, so just how are you? How's everything?
Wow, look at that. A lack of wit from Adam Azer.
Yeah.
It's like we've never seen this before. You're usually just so cunning on the mic.
But that said, I am working on new segments. So for the show.
New segments?
New segments.
What do you mean?
Okay, so I think this is actually a new segment that I just started for the baseball podcast, but I finally got the audio clip of Dark Helmet in Spaceballs going, "Fooled you!" And it's basically going to be about players who fooled you with their performance, and we're going to roll the Dark Helmet clip, and I think it's going to be great. Are you excited for that one?
Permission to do that?
I'm going to call it fair use. I'm not going. Like,
you're ripping off Rick Moranis? How dare you?
I think it's one of my favorite. I mean, it's not exactly a line. Favorite two words of that movie. So that's
from
great.
A great island in Canada.
Now, the other segment. I'm not sure how this is going to work. You guys can let me know. Also, I know a lot of you people out there listen to multiple fantasy football podcasts. So if I'm stealing this from another show, you have to let me know. I swear to you.
Hold the phone. Usually something like that suggests that you did get it from another podcast.
On my life, swear. It's not because I don't like other shows or other people, whatever. I don't have time. And I
you
don't.
Can't swear on your life. You've got to swear on your little kitty's life.
Oh, Dave, screw
the
you.
The cat.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you got to swear on your cat's life that you're not stealing this.
No, I did not steal anything. It just seems like something that might have been done before. That's all. I want to try Fantasy Mad Libs, and I don't know how that would work, but I think there's something there. Fantasy Mad Libs. What do you think?
There's something there, all right.
So it's just like filling in the blank?
Yeah,
Tom
I don't
Brady
know.
Will score blank fantasy points this week. We've been doing it on Fantasy Football Today for years. You have been stealing.
No.
No wonder why you wouldn't swear on Zoe's little furry life.
It wouldn't be like that. It would be like, you know, you'd give me three adjectives, a noun, and two verbs, and then I would have a predetermined fantasy football sentence or something like that, and I'd plug the words in, and we'd see how it goes. Or maybe instead of adjective, nouns, and verbs, we do quarterbacks, running backs, wide receivers, and tight ends, and I don't know. What do you think? Is there something there?
You're making Peter Rowe very unhappy right now.
Who's that?
The guy who said that we should stop being
funny. Oh! That's part of our mailbag show. All right, fine. So let's go to the injuries, news, and notes, and then we'll read the emails. FantasyFootball@CBSI.com. FantasyFootball@CBSI.com. And you can follow us on Twitter, @DaveRichard, singular. @JamieEisenberg, whatever it is, EIS something. And then I am Adam Azer, AIZER.
All right, so hold up. Uh-huh. He didn't have a clever way to start the podcast.
No.
Then when he thinks of things to do on the podcast, he completely bombs it. Mm-hmm. And then he doesn't even know how to spell your last name.
Yeah.
I think we boot him from this week's podcast.
Fine.
We just get him. You're out.
Do you know how to publish it?
No.
Okay.
I'm back in. Fooled you.
Out,
all right. Sam Bradford reported to Philadelphia camp. What is with me today? I don't want to talk about Sam Bradford. I want to talk about Jordan Matthews because I was looking it up. Jordan Matthews was the number 20 wide receiver in fantasy last year. I never would have guessed that.
Yeah, talk about fooled you.
Yeah, exactly. You got it. No,
it was Mr. Garbage Time.
You got to say fooled you the right way.
No, I don't. It was Mr. Garbage Time last year. You recall. We couldn't trust him for a lot of the games where he actually played well stat line wise, but it came in fourth quarter situations when the game was well out of hand.
He had two good games to start the year. Then he stunk. And then looks like five of his last six games, he had at least 9 fantasy points.
But a lot of that was, we can't trust him. You can't start him. And then he'd have a fourth quarter play.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he had 3 monster games at the end. What I found interesting about Matthews is that he was the number 20 wide receiver in fantasy with the 20th most targets. So perfectly proportional to the amount of targets he got, which was only 128. It's not a ton. Like I said, 20th most at the position. In theory, then, targets go up, then production would go up. Because, you look at this bad stretch for Jordan Matthews in between week 3 to week, 13, pretty bad. He really didn't get thrown at that much. So I don't know. Is there any hope for a bounce back season? You guys have him around 30th in your rankings.
I think he's going to be great value. You know, you're going to get a guy that's going to have some good opportunities, some good situations, probably in some comeback efforts again, you know, with a young quarterback and a defense that's trying to improve. But I don't think a lot of people look at it. You know, it's one of those things that I think just is natural with any walk of life. When you're burned by somebody, and a lot of people went all in on Matthews last year with a third or fourth round pick, you're not going to want to invest heavily in him again. So if you get him as your third receiver, I think that's fine. If you draft him as a starter, though, I'd be a little bit concerned.
Anybody else think that Philadelphia is going to throw quite a bit?
Well, that wouldn't be the Doug Peterson, Andy Reid mantra.
What do you mean?
They like to run the ball a lot.
They'd like to, but I think they're going to have to end up throwing
line,
a lot.
I think they still have a good running game with Matthews.
I think they end up I think they're the worst team in their division. I think they're going to end up throwing a decent amount. I think that helps Jordan Matthews, and he might get more garbage time stats this year. So
also,
I agree. I think he's a good value as a number three receiver.
There also is, I don't know if you saw this or not, but apparently Aguilar spent most of last season playing through an injury, and he was somebody that they clearly invested a lot in, so I think he's going to be more involved. Reuben Randall's addition, for what it's worth, is going to take away targets from these guys. And as we saw last year, it's pretty ridiculous. You know, I know you like to play the projection game of 16 games over a sample size. If you project the final four games of Zach Ertz's season over four games, I think it's 140 catches for 1,800 yards.
That's reasonable.
Just what he did in the final four games with only four touchdowns.
Yeah, but Jordan Matthews was really good in those four games too. At least the last three, he was huge.
Right, but
how did Sam Bradford not do better?
I don't know. I can't say it's off the top of my head, so I apologize. But I want to say that it felt a lot of it came really not in the flow of the game, more in the end of the game, whereas Ertz was in the flow of the game.
But very positive. Well, certainly Ertz was, yeah. Bradford somehow managed 20. Well, actually, Bradford threw, this is, I didn't realize this, 361, 380, 320 yards in his last three games.
20, 19, and 22 fantasy points.
Yeah, touchdowns weren't really there. He had five touchdowns in those games despite throwing for over 1,000 yards.
I feel like you've got to throw it out. It's going to be a completely different offense this year. It's going to be, like Jamie said, the Andy Reid, West Coast type of offense.
Yeah.
I think it's going to help Jordan Matthews catch a lot of passes.
Okay. Two straight years with eight touchdowns for Jordan Matthews, who you guys have, again, like I said, right around 30th. Right next to Dorial Green-Beckham, a little bit behind Alan Hearns, stuff like that. Melvin Gordon had microfracture surgery, it was revealed. He expects to be ready for training camp in July. Now, Jamie, I know that Gordon was a guy that you have hopes for bouncing back with a better, you know, healthier offensive line, better offense in year two. What about this news that he had microfracture surgery?
He's already been in voluntary workouts, so by all accounts, it's not that big of a deal, which is surprising. I mean, you know, given the fact that, you know, what microfracture surgery has been for athletes, not just NFL players. But if he's fine for training camp, I don't think he should be concerned at all. That what they've done this offseason just speaks volumes for how they feel Melvin Gordon is going to be. So no one of significance added as of yet. There is a situation, at least there was a rumor that Arian Foster could be, that could be a destination for him. If that happens, that changes things clearly. But as of now, it's still Gordon 1 and Woodhead 2 in terms of what their backfield shapes up on the depth chart.
And I read this about the microfracture on CBSSports.com, but we talked about on the website, CBSSports.com, we talked about Michael Gelkin's article in the San Diego Union Tribune, and he mentioned in that article, Reggie Bush reportedly had microfracture after the 2008 season. And in 2009, Bush averaged 5.6 yards per carry, a career high. So there's some variance, I guess, in the results after microfracture. Dave, Tom Brady has a cookbook. I think it's selling for like $200. Are you interested?
$200 for a cookbook?
Something like that.
Sign me up. That sounds like a great deal. I can't think of a better way to spend $200 than on...
What does Naughty Nana go for?
Oh, Naughty Nana? You mean the children's book that my mother wrote that's available on palmcirclepress.com?
Mm-hmm.
I think it's definitely less than $20.
Less than 20.
Yeah, so you could buy 10 Naughty Nana books, or you can get all of the delicious meals that a quarterback picked for his cookbook. Really, $200?
Yeah, $200.
$200.
So let me ask you this question.
I don't know if I would pay $3. I'd pay $2.
Would you rather go down the street and get a cookbook that's going to be the best cookbook ever, or spend $200 on Tom Brady's cookbook because it's some part of Big Extravaganza?
I don't know what in the world you're talking about as far as this podcast goes.
I don't even know what he's talking about. I would love
to know.
He's
making reference. This would get us into a whole big tangent. It involves burgers and me getting sick. It's a long deal that I don't think is worth it.
Yeah, okay. Peter Rowe would not like it.
No, he would not. He hates this podcast so far. Peter Rowe, part of the Mailbag Show, he sent a tweet to the three of us, said, "Guys, less attempts at humor on the podcast and just talk football."
Yeah,
and
I think we're batting a cool 0% on humor so far in this podcast.
But then he sent a follow-up to me. He said, you have to get the guys to stop trying to be funny and just talk fantasy football. They aren't funny. Bogs down the podcast. I think you're funny. And believe me, if we didn't try any humor, you would hate the podcast. It would be so boring. Oh, my gosh. How boring.
Boring, Adam?
It would be so boring that we wouldn't even care about this running back stat that Jamie is going to give us about a rookie running back. He's going to make you guess out there, people, about this cool stat about a rookie. Go ahead, Jamie.
I don't remember the number. Do you have the number?
Oh, no, I don't have it. Let me see if I can look it up.
Now, that was funny.
The stat is, which rookie running back had the second best rate of missed tackles among draft-eligible running backs this year? So forget about the numbers. It doesn't really matter.
Missed tackles or broken tackles?
If Adam has it, then he'll tell you.
I don't have it. I'm sorry.
Well, this is just an exercise in tremendous preparation by the two of you.
Does it really matter, though, Mr.
No, it doesn't matter.
I wouldn't think Derrick Henry broke a ton of tackles.
He's first.
Okay.
So who's second?
Well, it can't be Ezekiel Elliott, because that would seem a little too obvious for this. So I'm going to go with a guy that had a ton of attempts, and that's Kenneth Dixon.
No. Adam's guess on this was Kenyon Drake.
Mm-hmm.
You want
also
one more?
Also wrong.
Kenyon Drake was also wrong?
Yes.
Yeah.
One more. CJ Procise.
No.
Why don't you just tell us who broke
Paul Perkins.
Oh, yeah. Paul Perkins.
Paul Perkins.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, he's good, and he's in a great spot.
Adam disagrees on that.
No, I don't.
I recently moved Perkins ahead of Jennings. He's the first Giants running back I would draft.
I don't disagree on that. I would say that we should just at least give Rashad Jennings some due for having a nice year with a 4.4 yards per carry, and when they finally gave him the ball at the end of the year, his last four games were 22 carries for 81 yards in Miami. That wasn't so great, but he had 100.
He had either 100 yards or a touchdown in each of his final four games.
Yeah, and a couple of them were like huge yards games. So
I think the thing, though, to take into account is what went wrong in the first 12 games. Like, why did they wait so long to give him?
Yeah, they were
that
stupid.
Many touches.
Yeah,
and then now, obviously, with the addition of Perkins, you can't really count on them to give him all those touches.
See, I don't agree. So that's where I don't agree. I don't know that the addition of Perkins does much. This guy was a fifth-round draft pick.
But that's the NFL, though, Adam.
Who cares?
Yeah, fifth-round pick when you're a running back. It's almost like being a third-round pick or a second-round pick.
I don't know. There are not that many running backs that are good after it, that late. And also, this is a GM that is awful at picking players after the first round. I mean, Andre Williams was, what, a third-round draft pick? So, you know, I'm not eliminating. I mean, that's fine. I think you should take a chance on Paul Perkins because how many running backs are going into a situation where the running game needs to get that much better? It makes sense. I think Rashad Jennings deserves the first crack, and I think he did enough last year to make him somewhat interesting to me.
I don't disagree with the first thing you said. He should get the first crack. He's the veteran of that team. He's been there. This will be his third season, and he did come off playing well. It's the same coaching staff that's calling plays in Ben McAdoo, so it's not like he has to impress somebody different. The thing that concerns me is he's 31. He's shown an inability throughout his career to stay healthy for the most part. And again, what was the difference in the first 12 games last year that all of a sudden in the final four, oh, hey, let's give this guy all this work. So they clearly, like you said, they made an attempt, I think rightfully so, to whether it's the right guy or not, it's hard to say, but to find somebody different. And the thing I like about Perkins is, and it's the same thing about Jennings, but you know what Shane Vereen is, but he could play on all three downs. You know, you talked about this when we did the podcast following the draft, Adam, about what, I think it was him, but you said it maybe about a couple guys. You know, he had at least 24 catches each of his first three seasons in college, or his three seasons that he played at UCLA, mm-hmm. and that's impressive for college.
He's the all-time receptions leader for a running back in UCLA history.
Right, so he's got the ability to not have to come off the field, where they didn't really show that with, or they really haven't shown it with Jennings, at least last year. And you know what Vereen's going to do on running downs. He's really not going to be a factor. So this is a guy that could stay on the field, and you heard the reports this week about he could be a complete guy. And I don't know if they feel that way about either Jennings or Vereen.
I feel like the Giants are committed to using multiple running backs no matter what.
Sure, sure, sure.
So even if let's just say
unless Perkins takes off.
Well, you could say the same thing with Jennings, but yeah. Unless one of those guys really just like Jennings caught fire at the end of last year. Right. And I'm looking at his game log. Those last four games, he had at least 16 touches in each game, at least 14 carries in each game. I don't believe he had either of those things in the first 12 games. He had one game in his first 12 games where he had 16 touches. He had 83 total yards.
Yeah, he did well.
To me, he's a volume running back who probably isn't going to get a lot of volume because he has to split with Vereen, because Perkins is going to take a piece.
Who's the fourth guy?
I think it's Darkwa. I think they're done with Andre Williams.
Not Rainey?
If Rainey can prove it. He's got to hold on to the
ball. Darkwa's coming off an injury, though.
They don't need four. I mean, it's ridiculous.
No. Not necessarily to play. I just wonder who's the fourth one that makes the team.
Yeah. By the way, Andre Williams was a fourth-round draft pick, not a third-round pick. And he got his opportunity. So yeah, Perkins will get his opportunity, and we'll see. So let's go to the mailbag.
Good rookie running back stat, Jamie.
Yeah, it was great. Hilarious.
I think I got it from Pro Football Focus.
It was very funny. Very funny stat. Emails and tweets. David Mendel asks, what do the tight end tiers look like heading into 2016? Tight end tiers.
Well, I finished my first round of tight end tiers for our annual Fantasy Football Preview magazine. And I've got five tiers of tight ends. I've got Gronk in a tier by himself. There's nobody as good as he is. And then I've got Ivor, Reed, and Olsen.
If you'd say right now Reed's going to play 16 games, do you think he could come close? Because he did last year.
Sure. Three things worry me about Jordan Reed. Number one, can he play 16 games? I don't think so. Number two.
Or I guess for him, 14 games. Because Gronk's only going to play 15. He got four without
Brady. Yeah. Two, are you making the case here, Jamie, for Reed over Gronk at fantasy?
Not over. In the same tier, though.
Okay. I can't do it. I can't put. I wouldn't draft Reed anywhere near Gronk.
I would agree with you. I just think it's interesting, though, just how he played last year, putting it all together.
Yeah,
you know, statistically,
I guess I'm a little bit of a skeptic when it comes to Reed
because
I don't think he can stay healthy. I think Kirk Cousins isn't as good as he was last season. I think his schedule helped him out, and I think that Josh Doctson's arrival will take targets away from Reed. Depends on what they do with their other receivers. Honestly.
They're not doing anything.
I know. I can't believe it. I'm stunned they're not going to get rid of Garcon for the amount of money that they're paying him. Why?
Because they have to keep at the certain salary level, which is why they paid Josh Norman all that money. I mean, he's a good guy to have around.
To give an extension or accelerate a bonus. You can always get around that without having to keep.
But they're done with him after this year anyway.
Well,
I'm surprised by it.
I want to bring one thing into this Gronkowski equation. He's going to play four games without Tom Brady.
But three of them are at home. Yes. And I think that Garoppolo, if it is Garoppolo starting, is going to know to give Gronkowski.
Yeah.
A lot of targets. It's not like his type of target will alter significantly from Brady to Garoppolo, unless Garoppolo just absolutely wakes up the morning of the game and just, you know, is crap in his pants.
I think it could have a big impact. Even if he gets the same amount of targets, it doesn't mean doesn't mean it's going to be the same production. It won't be Gronkowski's fault. I could see. At the end of the year, it being, you know, pretty close between him and whoever the number two tight end is. In other words, I think you take your projected fantasy points for Rob Gronkowski. You have to reduce it. You have to reduce it with Brady out at least four games, right?
Yeah, but there's also the chance of Brady in the 12 games that he plays is so ticked off and wants to make a statement that Gronk has one of his best years ever just in those 12 games.
He was trying to be the MVP last year. He's going to try again this year.
Okay, so you're honestly telling me that you don't downgrade Gronkowski. He's obviously still the number one tight end. He's still a first-round pick, but you don't downgrade your expectations of Rob Gronkowski at all because of Tom Brady's four-game suspension.
I mean, you just said it. He's still a first-round pick. He's still the number one tight end. How?
Well,
you
is
can
he
downgrade
is he,
him a little bit and still call him these things?
Is he top five or is he top 10? You know, I mean, there's a difference.
He's top 10.
I still am top five. I haven't moved at all.
Okay. So let's go back to the tiers, Dave.
All right. So Gronk's
and
on
just,
his own.
Just keep in mind the suspension can still be, you know,
reduced or
thrown
out.
Yeah.
To me, I've got Eifert, Reed, and Olsen in the next tier, rounds three and rounds four. And then I think there's a gap of about 20 to 30 picks where you won't see a tight end at all. Round seven, in any order you want of these guys, Delanie Walker, Travis Kelce, Gary Barnage, Ladarius Green.
You're missing the boat on Fleener.
I'm not. He's in the next tier, and I think he's a round eight guy. But I'm not putting him in that tier.
I'd put Fleener in the tier above with Eifert, Reed, and
Olsen.
And Olsen.
How come?
Oh, I think he's going to be great in New Orleans. I mean, every tight end in that offense, including the old and decrepit Benjamin Watson, got 109 targets, 70 plus catches, 800 plus yards, and finished as a top 10 tight end every year. I don't see Fleener, who's been 50 catches 3 years in a row, dropping off from where Ben Watson was last year. And I think he's going to be better than Watson. And you look at what his stats were when he didn't share the field with another tight end of significance. And Dwayne Allen, I think, is somewhat of significance. Certainly not anything that the Saints have on their field tight end wise. I just went back and was looking at Sean Payton's comments at the owners meetings about what he said, what he can do in that offense and that he doesn't drop targets. I think he's going to be great. I mean, I couldn't be more excited about it. Player at that position this year than Kobe Fleener.
See, that's how I feel about Ladarius Green.
Oh, and you should. I mean,
I'm a Green guy. Yeah. I think Green is the one that I'll take that step with, even though we haven't really seen it from him.
Sure.
Because of where he's going, because he's still got a great quarterback throwing to him, because Martavis Bryant is not in the picture anymore, or at least for this season in Pittsburgh.
Sure.
So he's going to be another dynamic that he didn't really have at tight end. Now, Heath Miller caught a bunch of touchdowns. You know, once every 4 or 5 years.
Miller over the last 4 years averaged about 65 catches, about 600 some yards and 4 touchdowns.
Okay. So I think Green is a better athlete than Miller.
Totally agree.
And if he gets 60 catches, I think he's going to get close to 807, which is pretty much where I've got that tier of tight ends. Run 800.
Well, I don't disagree with you on Green. I think both those guys.
Fleener is like a shade behind him.
Based on opportunity for both these guys in the offenses that they're going to, systems that they're playing with, quarterbacks that they're playing with, coaches who will lean on them, they both, to me, are off the charts. But Fleener, I think, just given what Drew Brees likes with that spot and what Peyton likes with that spot, that seam spot, that seam route.
You can see it in your head, right?
Again, I just went back and looked. He said he's going to be more vertical in our offense than he's ever been before. He said, if you throw it to him 8 times, he's coming down with 8 catches. And last year's stats to me are, I don't want to say they're impressive, but when they had nothing at quarterback, when it was Matt Hasselbeck who couldn't do anything, and he still manages another 50 catch season without luck for nine games.
Did you
games?
Break it down without luck? And
no,
luck?
But it's still to come away 7 games of Andrew Luck, and Andrew Luck wasn't effective for the first two because of the shoulder problem. That I think speaks volumes for what he could do. Featured in an offense. I wish I had the numbers. Adam, you might, because I know we've talked about this a lot. What his stats were without Dwayne Allen 2 years ago. And yeah, they're just monstrous.
I can look for him. I don't remember, but yes, he was that great FanDuel play whenever Dwayne Allen was out.
Right,
you know?
Sure.
And, I agree with Jamie on this particular one. I like Fleener. Olsen, though, let me ask you about Olsen. With Kelvin Benjamin coming back, in 2015, last year, Olsen scored 150 fantasy points. He was the number four tight end. That's standard scoring. In 2014, also a very good year, 130 fantasy points. So 20 fantasy points less. And that was like, I think at the time that was a career year for him or close to it. He had a great year.
Yes, it was.
What do you think about now with Kelvin Benjamin back? Does that hurt Greg Olsen?
Nope. I don't think it does. I think he's going to continue to get a lot of targets and still be that guy in the middle of the field. He actually had his second highest amount of touchdowns last season, and he posted a new career high in yardage. He had a great receiving average last year, 14.3 yards per catch. Never was that high before.
Yeah.
He's still going to have well over 100 targets, still going to have 70-plus catches. Maybe he doesn't get to 1,000 yards, but he's still going to get you 6, 7, 8 touchdowns.
He's starting to feel to me like when the tide turned for Jason Witten. Like he's at that point of still one of the more reliable guys for his quarterback. You know, that rapport between Cam and Olsen, they do commercials together. You see there's probably a good friendship there. But think about Witten 2, 3 years ago where he was – tight end play wasn't as – the disparity between the good guys and the bad guys wasn't as bad. You know, Witten would post 800, 900 yards, 6, 7 touchdowns. He'd be a top 3 tight end. So I think like the way I feel about Olsen right now is like he's kind of getting to that point where it's going to start to go downhill. I don't know if it'll be steep like we saw with Witten, but I do think that if Funchess starts to step up a little bit, Benjamin's going to post his numbers. Cam for the last 2 years and Olsen's been good over the last 2 years. I got 9 touchdowns out of Benjamin 2 years ago, 10 touchdowns out of Ginn last year. Both those guys, I just looked this up today. I was shocked. You know how many drops Ginn had last year?
15,000?
Ballpark it at a dozen.
10. He was tied for second. Mm-hmm. You know how many drops Benjamin had the year before?
9 or something like that?
10, tied for second.
Okay.
So he's gotten terrible play from his number one guy in that regard and still gotten an average of 9.5 touchdowns out of those two spots. Mm-hmm. I wonder, though, if Benjamin comes back. I don't know what you expect from him. I expect he goes an uptick a little bit of where he was as a rookie. Yep. So 80 catches, 1,100 yards, 10 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. Ginn is going to still catch probably 4 or 5. I would imagine Funchess is somewhere in that range, 2 touchdown-wise. It has to impact something or someone, and I think it's Olsen.
Or Cam Newton just gets better and better. Keeps putting
or
up.
Sure, he can doesn't do what you think he's going to do.
Well, I you know what Ginn is. Ginn is right. The shots down the field, which is still going to be there. And so it's not.
But
like
that's he's not going to get even half as many touchdowns this year, is
oh,
he?
I that's why I said 4 or 5.
I don't even think he goes that.
Well, I mean that's kind of what he was his last stint in Carolina before he left and you know bounced around the league. Mm-hmm. So they'll take shots at him, and so again, Tim, the thing with Olsen where I think he'll either stay at the same level or start to falter is what Funchess' impact is. Because I think Funchess could be a significant red zone threat based on his size.
Witten's numbers went down when his spleen went down. Wasn't that what it is? Spleen or appendix?
Well, he had a spleen injury and he didn't miss any games. Or
he didn't miss any games, but he played through it. But that's it was 2 years ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was the first game of the season, I think.
Yeah, but I thought
in 2014.
The
year before that, he had a downtick in yardage, but he had 8 touchdowns.
In 2013.
All right, guys, that was one email. Let's go to the next. Eric Butler.
There's your tight end preview for 2016.
Yeah, it was good. I liked it. How does Kevin White compare to the rookie class this year? Is Kevin White a top 30 wide receiver?
He's close.
He's the number one rookie receiver if you put him with the Treadwells Absolutely. And Colemans. He's way ahead of them. And yeah, he's as we sit here now on May 11th, he's not going to be any better than, you know, top 30-ish. I've got him 33rd in my receiver rankings. I don't know where you are,
right
Jamie.
In that range.
But that's where he is. But when training camp opens in Bourbonnais, Illinois, and he's on the field, and he's running around, and he's healthy, I would assume that he's going to put enough out there to get people excited about him. And he will leap over guys that you're not going to be as excited about, like Emmanuel Sanders, Larry Fitzgerald, Jordan Matthews.
You're a Sanders guy.
I am a Sanders guy, but if Kevin White's got potential to be, you know, a huge threat in Chicago, Alshon Jeffrey or no Alshon Jeffrey, people are going to line up to take him, and they'll snatch him long before, I think, round 7 is that range for him right now.
The interesting thing, and I wrote this in for our magazine, the number 2 receiver for the Bears last year was Marquise Wilson at 28 catches, 420-some-odd yards, and 2 touchdowns. And I said, I bet White does that in the first month if he's healthy.
Excellent call.
So our next tweet, or this is actually an email, comes from Travis in Indiana's first state capital. I don't know. Indianapolis?
Let's go with Indianapolis.
Looks like Corydon. I don't care. Hey, you guys, every year I draft Matt Ryan, and every year I don't win my league. Is he the negative common denominator, or am I? I need to win this year, and I'm seriously thinking about not drafting Matt Ryan. Maybe I should give him one last chance. Do you have an auction draft strategy that allows me to draft Matt Ryan and still win my league, 14 teams?
Yeah, get him for $1, stick him on the end of your bench, and pick a great team.
No, but then he's going to lose because he's got him on his team.
Well, no, he's probably picked him as a starter.
I don't like Matt Ryan as a fantasy starter. I can't give him credit anymore.
Sure.
You know, 3 years ago it was Julio got hurt.
Yep.
2 years ago it was Will's offensive line got hurt. Last year he had Julio. He had a good offensive line. What the hell happened, Matt Ryan?
He's allergic to touchdowns. Allergic.
Yeah. Blamed it on Kyle Shanahan, and he couldn't get Kyle Shanahan's offense down. You'd think that now would be the time that he would put it all together. They went younger at wide receiver by getting Mohamed Sanu. They added a decent tight end in Austin Hooper. Their offensive line is going to be better than it's been in years. And they've got Devontae Freeman, who could catch for 500 yards out of the backfield and make plays. So you would think that this would be the year. You can get him as a backup. You can get him for $1 in an auction. You can get him for a late-round pick if you want him, if you think he bounces back after this three-year decline. I'm not excited about him.
Matt Ryan or Jameis Winston?
Oh, Jameis.
More upside with Winston.
Matt Ryan or Tyrod Taylor?
Much more upside with Taylor.
I agree.
Well, that brings us to our next question from Nick. No, it's from Matt in Toronto. I was wondering
who
you guys think will have better fantasy careers. Better fantasy career, Jameis Winston or Marcus Mariota, and DeAndre Hopkins or Amari Cooper? So let's start with the quarterbacks first. Winston or Mariota?
We're in agreement on Winston, I think.
I think Winston. The thing about Mariota that'll be interesting is how much they let him run this year, because he was great running at Oregon, and you know Malarkey's talked about that, some more design runs. That'll help his fantasy prowess. But you know the one thing you know about, and I guess it's not fair to say because Dorial Green Beckham could certainly be good, but you know that Winston should be tied to Mike Evans for several years. And Evans, I think, has the ability to elevate his quarterback play.
I feel like we won't see the best of Mariota until Mike Malarkey is no longer the head coach of the Titans.
Fair.
What about the second question, DeAndre Hopkins or Amari Cooper?
Well, you've seen Hopkins have, I'm not saying two elite years is
one elite year and one very good year.
Yeah, and
1,200 yards. Cooper had two touchdowns.
Cooper had one very good year so far, but. I mean, it's. I would say it's kind of tied into how Brock Osweiler does. Does he help Hopkins get better?
Yeah, I mean that's
because you
thing.
Know Carr should have the ability to help.
Cooper get better. Right, have a big year. But you looked at the crappy quarterbacks Hopkins dealt with last year. He had a monster season.
Yeah,
he did.
Are you going to say Osweiler isn't as good as Brian Hoyer?
No. I'm just curious.
I'm just curious.
I mean, if they had the same quarterback, I think. I would easily go with Hopkins, but they don't, and that's a big part of it. So I just want to compare their rookie numbers here, but I need a minute. So let's go to our next email. It's
Oh,
Nick.
Cooper had to be better.
Yeah, Cooper was better.
Yeah, I just want to know how much better. Nick, name three top 20 players from last year that you would avoid this year.
Calvin Johnson.
Top 20 overall or at their positions?
Whatever you want.
Avoid? I mean, DeMarco Murray was the 18th best running back. There's no chance I would draft him at all.
Yeah, he's not a top 20 guy anymore. Matt Ryan.
Jeremy Maclin finished pretty high, and I don't know that I could swallow that pill. He's been going pretty late where it's solid value or like mid-rounds, but Jeremy Maclin probably not going to be on my teams.
Jamaal Charles and Devontae Freeman make me really nervous.
Yeah.
I understand why, but if I'm looking for a running back in late round one or round two, I'm going to take the chance on them.
See, I just don't like saying that there.
Saying I'm going to take the chance on them?
Yeah.
Well, I think the upside that they offer makes it worth it. They have the upside to put up more yards than any receiver.
Running back.
And any receiver, because you're going to pick a receiver if you don't take them. And they've got potential to put up just as many touchdowns as any receiver can get in that spot.
Charles makes me, like, the more I think about Jamaal Charles, 29 years old, coming off his second torn ACL in 5 years.
And, you kind of want to wait and see what he looks like, you know? It's just like with Melvin Gordon. You want to wait and see how he looks.
But you may not see anything because they're going to have kid gloves on him through the majority of training camp, I would imagine. Why would you put him out there?
Well, he'll practice in training camp, won't he?
Yeah.
I'm not going to see him in preseason games, but
then you have,
there'll be reports. There'll be things going around.
You'll have West taking some touches. You'll have Ware potentially taking some touches. That's going to be bad for him. And then Freeman, I think, you talked about, or you hinted at a little bit, the Falcons, I think they improved their offensive line. They're going to run the ball better. And so will he be involved as much running the ball if they do give more work to Tevin Coleman? It's a big if. But I think that lowers the value for him. I mean, look, all these guys are going to be nerve-wracking. Thomas Rawls, you know, we talked about this a lot. He's got so much upside and potential, but why'd they go and get three running backs in the draft?
Yeah, that was weird. The Kristen Michael thing didn't, that whole, we're going to get Kristen Michael involved, that didn't bother me because he's had his chances and he's done nothing. But the fact that they drafted three running backs,
I guarantee you, they watched Alex Collins play and they thought of Marshawn Lynch.
They also watched Thomas Rawls play and say, okay, we can find him anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
No. They drafted three running backs?
But he'll get first crack.
Huh?
They drafted three running backs? Or two?
They drafted Procise, they drafted Collins, and they took a fullback late. And I think they signed another running back, too, if I'm not mistaken.
Amari Cooper, man, 72 catches, 1,070 yards. DeAndre Hopkins had 52 catches for 802 yards. Cooper had 6 touchdowns to Hopkins, too. Now, compare Cooper to Julio Jones' rookie year. Julio only had 54 catches. Cooper had 72. That's a lot. Cooper had 1,070 yards. Jones had 959. So he's got him beaten in catches and yards. Jones had 2 more touchdowns. Heck of a rookie season for Amari Cooper.
And he was limited by that foot injury to close the year. In 3 of his final 4 games, he had less than 20 yards receiving.
And he was number 2 in receiving and receiving touchdowns. Behind one Michael Crabtree. And targets, yes. That's all going to change. It's all heading toward Cooper now.
Greg Baker, which late-round PPR running backs will you target? PPR late-round targets.
He mentioned Theo Riddick and Bilal Powell in his tweet to you.
Yes, he did.
Yeah. Well, those are two good ones.
Procise.
Procise is a great one.
I think DeAndre Washington is going to play on passing downs for the Raiders because Latavius Murray did not do a great job catching the ball back though.
That's not a bad call. They're making a big deal about him as a guy who can like do anything and everything. I don't see it, but I'm not the general manager of the Oakland Raiders. I'm aboard the Kenneth Dixon bandwagon after all. It wouldn't surprise me if he ended up getting a lot of catches and being the best Ravens running back.
Just depend on what Forsett's role is on the team.
Yep.
If he's on the
team.
But it sounds like he's gonna be on the team.
It does.
Kenyon Drake.
Kenyon Drake's a good one.
Yeah, I mean,
Green is still going to go late. You know, he had 59 catches last year.
Yeah, but all he does is catch the ball. How about Duke Johnson? We haven't said Duke yet.
He won't be late in PPR.
No.
I mean, he went.
He shouldn't be. Let's put it that way.
He went mid-round pick in our standard draft, which he should.
By the way, I forgot to mention.
If he's Gio, by the way, I didn't realize how many total yards Gio had last year.
Yeah, a lot.
1202.
Mm-hmm. He had a great start, and then they pulled him. After the bye, they obviously made the decision that they weren't going to ride him as hard. Maybe he was hurt. Maybe they just didn't like what they saw. I have no idea.
I forgot to mention Julio Jones only played 13 games in his rookie year, just comparing him to Cooper. Now, you mentioned Gio Bernard, and I want to say, you know, last week we talked about why did I take Jordy Nelson over David Johnson. Mm-hmm. I explained why I took him over DeAndre Hopkins, and you explained why I shouldn't have, which makes sense. The reason I took Jordy Nelson over David Johnson with the 9th overall pick is Jeremy Hill. I was so sure that Jeremy Hill was going to be so good last year that he'd be an easy top 3 pick this year. Like that was such a layup to me. And yeah, he burned me. So I think
he burned everybody.
Well, it's again, I think, you know, it's happened 2-3 years in a row now where just all these running backs just keep falling apart.
Yeah. I'm but tired of talking about it and not doing anything about it.
We're saying he's falling apart.
What happened is he
had the same amount of carries and had 330 fewer yards. He had a ton of touchdowns, and that's what saved his bacon in fantasy, but he also had a ton of fumbles. And the fact that that coaching staff stuck with him then, and it seems like they're sticking with him now, I think that's why you can feel okay with Hill as a number 2 running back.
Well, I don't think Adam was talking about that in that regard.
He was talking about for David Johnson.
No, he's talking about just the theory
of rookie running backs coming back in their second year.
Or just running backs in general.
Yeah, running backs in general. But
that they can't consistently put up big numbers year after year.
Well, it's just the ones that you haven't seen do it year after year. And so why not take the tried and true thing, which is clearly these receivers that play at an elite level year after year after year. Obviously, there's still the injury risk, as we saw with Jordy, as we see with Benjamin, as we saw, you know, I mean, it happens. Steve Smith, you know, during the year. I'm just thinking of a guy that got hurt during the season, but Brandon Marshall the year before. So they're going to be guys that get hurt at that spot too. Des Bryant, but I there's obviously much more of a track record of that with running backs and them not consistently performing.
Here's an email from Tim. It says, "Dear Caesar, John, and Gino." All right. We'll Google it. "I know that Devontae Freeman was considered a surprise last year, but I drafted him in three of my four leagues and had absolutely no interest in Coleman. I was honestly targeting Freeman because of something you guys said over the summer. At one point while discussing the two, you said that Freeman was much better in pass protection and that it was a liability for Coleman. Having been burned by drafting exciting rookies who can't stay on the field because of poor pass protection, I decided that Freeman would be able to play more." So he said, "Thanks for that. And a lot of running back evaluation for fantasy is nuanced, but the inability to pass protect and be a deal breaker for playing time. Is there anyone this year that is similarly overlooked?"
I don't know this, but I would assume, you know, the guys that have a good track record catching the ball are on the field in passing situations, so they probably have a good deal of ability to pass block.
Like, yeah, I mean, most of the case, that's like a Perkins. Right. Most of the case, that's the time. But sometimes these guys, they're on the field on third down and they're running a route out of the backfield.
Right. Well, I remember
thinking about
it. I remember just because with Freeman, you know, he trained at the trainer that I see quite a bit in Delray Beach and the offense that he played in. And so I know that's something that, you know, was brought to my attention in terms of his pass protection at Florida State and the offense he played in protecting Jameis. So it just stood out to me with Devontae. Do you know where he was drafted last year? Which is, you know, it's easy to, you know, for us to say draft Devontae Freeman because he fell to a spot. And, you know, we're going to say that about a lot of, like Paul Perkins, for example, but we're going to say it about a lot of running backs. He was drafted on average in round 10 last year and he finished as the best running back in football.
Jordan, I'm looking through my notes from when I watched the rookie running backs. Jordan Howard was good in pass protection.
That's interesting because he didn't really play on pass.
Yeah, I know, but he did it. Kenneth Dixon was just okay. Devontae Booker was just okay. Alex Collins, I went deep on him. He wasn't great at it. He tried. Perkins. Inconsistent at pass protection and stands no chance against bigger defenders. That's what I wrote for him.
Okay, well, let's go to the next one. Oh, by the way, I couldn't find anything for Caesar, John, and Gino, just a bunch of pizza places. So this question is from JC, from a city in the UK that's not London.
Isn't there I don't know.
Topeka?
Let's go with Topeka. That sounds good.
All right, he says, "Hey, Foster, Mac, and Thorny."
Now, wait a minute. They're playing a game in England this year that's not in London. Is it Tottenham?
Sure.
I think that's where they're playing the game.
Let's go with Leicester City since they won the Premier League. The 5,000 won.
Sure. Let's go with it. Now I'm looking up Tottenham and not paying attention to Adam.
"I need an answer right meow." And these are all Super Trooper references. $200 budget, half point PPR, three receiver league. Pick three of these four to keep. So throwback one, Andrew Luck for 24, Jamal Charles for 22, Thomas Rawls for 13, Odell Beckham for 16.
Bye bye Luck, right?
Yeah, you throw back Luck.
Yeah.
Also, wait a second. Oh yeah, okay. Also, JC wants to know what you think of him. He's the commissioner of the league. What do you think of him? He's thinking of allowing.
I think he's swell, Adam.
He's thinking of allowing team owners to make trades in the offseason before the keeper deadline. What do you think about that idea?
Oh, so players that you're not... He can trade Andrew Luck and then keep three other players?
Or he trades Luck and Charles for...
Devontae David Freeman Johnson. Or something like that, right. Yeah, I think that's crappy, and I don't like leagues that can do that. It's kind of like cheating.
Why?
Because you're taking a player that you had no intention of keeping and you're getting something for him. You're getting value for him. For nothing.
Well, it's not
because you weren't going to keep him anyway.
What if somebody's so in love with Jamal Charles and Andrew Luck, but they only have one good keeper and the rest are terrible?
I don't know what to tell you. Then you know what? Here's what you do. JC should keep Luck and Charles And once it's clear that he's kept them, then he trades them.
But I don't mind it because it's kind of like regular football, right?
Where I don't mind it either.
You're a GM and you say, I could trade for this guy, but I think he's just going to get cut and I'll try to get him as a free agent. So you take that sort of calculated risk.
Sure. So if he thinks that Luck's going to go for $30 and he gets him for 24, whatever it was.
I think it's cheap and I would exploit the hell out of it if it were my league.
Yeah,
but how would you exploit it though?
Because I would take all the players that I couldn't keep or didn't want to keep and I would trade them for a 17th round draft pick or a DST.
Well, that's different though. If you're saying draft picks are involved, I mean, then that makes it a different equation. But if he wants to take two keepers and trade it for one, I don't have a problem with that.
Then let him keep the players first and then make the deal. That's how I would. That's my argument.
Matt from Central California. This year, our league has decided to do a slow auction. I was wondering if you had any tips regarding this draft. What is the difference between a slow auction and an auction?
I would imagine a slow auction is like a player's up for bid for a day. This sounds like a terrible idea, Matt.
Maybe he just means an auction.
If it's just a regular old auction, then it's awesome, where you get everybody together and you bid on players. It's awesome. You should definitely do that. But if it's going to take any longer than 5 hours, it's a total catastrophe.
That's a lot of hours.
You'll regret your life.
Yeah, and if you want, we'll do auction podcasts. But if you want one tip, save some money for the middle of the draft. Great bargains in the middle.
Yep, that's a great tip.
K from NC. His name's just K. It says, Dear Donald, Hillary, and Bernie. I know them. I run a 10-team auction keeper league where the draft values for players are based off the winning bid from the previous year plus $5. So you have to pay $5 extra every year to keep a guy. This only applies when the original team keeps said player. If a player is claimed off waivers or as a free agent, the keeper value is the fab bid plus $5 or just $5, respectively. The latter part is becoming an issue as owners are rostering injured studs like Jamal Charles, Jordy Nelson, at extremely low values. How would you curb this behavior, or would you let it ride? I don't have a problem with that. I mean,
I don't have a problem with it either.
Yeah, it's like you draft Jordy Nelson last year when you knew he was out for the year, or you bid on him, you bid a few bucks, and then you're taking that bench spot the entire year, but you pay off the next year. You got him for whatever you had him plus $5.
I agree. And if someone's in a keeper league and they let Jamal Charles go after getting him for whatever you paid for him, $25, $30. And here's one thing. Should Jamal Charles' value reset when he hits the waiver wire? Or should it be what he was drafted at? So if he was drafted as a $30 player and then he got hurt, I cut him off my team, so he's on waivers. When somebody picks him up, do they get him at zero or whatever they bid off of fab? Or do they get him at that original value?
I give you an example. In one of the keeper leagues I play in, you're only allowed to keep guys drafted after the 8th round. So if you cut somebody that was drafted in the first 8 rounds, you cannot keep them because that's where they were drafted at. Now, anybody picked up off waivers can be kept.
Right.
So we had a situation this past year, which I probably shouldn't have let it happen, but there's an owner that doesn't necessarily pay that much attention, doesn't tend to do very well in the league.
That's why you keep him in the league.
But he likes to play. I mean, you know, he tries his draft.
Yeah, but there's a guy in every league that sticks around because you want his money.
No, stop talking about me.
Okay. In any event, he wasn't paying attention last year and dropped Julian Edelman. But Edelman was a keeper for him. So he could have kept Edelman forever.
Mm-hmm.
And he dropped him. And somebody went and picked him up because Edelman was hurt and out for the season. And I didn't think, because he's been kept for so many years, I thought he was drafted. Like it just escaped my mind. And it was like a couple days after the fact where somebody was like, I can't believe I picked up Edelman as a keeper. And I was like, oh, I probably shouldn't have let that happen as a commissioner.
Right.
I probably should have said, hey, listen, you can't drop him. But yeah, in any event, like you can't pick up guys. Like I know I drafted David Johnson last year, dropped him at some point during the season because I needed to pick up somebody else who was probably keeper eligible. And then somebody picked up Johnson. And I know it's going to be an argument next year about where he was drafted because the owner probably didn't realize it.
The keeper league that I'm in, once a player has established value, i.e. is drafted or is picked up off waivers the very first time he's brought onto a team, that's his value for the whole year. So if this were my keeper league, Jamal Charles would have had that same value, and he shouldn't be allowed to see his value reset just because he hits waivers.
And last one. How about this? This is from James. He says, Dear Donald, Hillary, and Bernie. Would you believe that? Same exact greeting.
He only put one L in Hillary, whereas K from NC put two L's.
Oh, well then I can't.
And the only reason why I know this is because my daughter's name is Hillary with two L's.
Who's Hillary with one L? That's Hillary.
Hillary Swank, maybe?
James just moved back to Australia, and none of his friends play fantasy football. That was terrible. Oh, terrible. What's the best way to start a league and get people interested, or is there a way to find a random group that will be competitive throughout the season? What do you say to James in Australia?
Well, I think the nice thing is there's an internet in Australia, so you don't have to just have people in Australia to play with.
Absolutely.
I mean, look, I don't know where he works or, you know, his neighborhood or gym that he works out at. There's probably any venues of places that you can.
Maybe he's an unemployed fat guy, so he doesn't have a job or a gym.
Then there's the internet, the chat rooms.
He's definitely got that if he's an unemployed fat guy.
I would say that, you know, you just hope to meet people that are interested in it, and you try and start up a league.
Is there a way to just like find people online or their websites where random
people like on CBS, you can play. We call them premium games where you can play against strangers for money.
Right.
Yeah, we've got that.
And you could go on Twitter, I'm sure, and say, "Hey, looking for a fantasy league. Is anybody, you know, interested?"
Yes. You know what?
We used to have message boards, but we don't have them anymore.
No, James, if you tweet me. And you say who you are, James from Australia. I will retweet. You don't have to do it now. Do it closer to the start of the year if you want. I will retweet it.
No. Do it now. Absolutely do it now.
Fine. I'll get people to join a league with you. I'm sure they will be happy to do it. Dave, last question. Do you think the water in the toilet flushes clockwise or counterclockwise in Australia? Do you not?
Based on the Simpsons episode that I remember, it's the other way.
Yeah, it goes. I think it goes clockwise. Here it goes counterclockwise.
I don't know.
Yeah, I think so. That's it for today's mailbag. Thank you all for emailing in. Dave, Jamie, thank you guys. I'm out. See ya.
Bye.
Bye.